Hello, and welcome to the Stasis Pod, the Transformers Podcast 400th episode spectacular. I'm Rob.
For episode 401.
Pew, pew, pew.
I wasn't paying attention to numbers last time we recorded.
Our like, early oh, numbers got a little fuzzy, so yes. It's close enough.
Official of 401st. I didn't bother to recount how many other extra episodes there are one of these days, but probably not.
We had to get terminal velocity out of our system.
It's true.
The Patreon we just recorded was Patreon episode 90.
Ooh. Man, that's so many episodes.
That is many episodes.
Yes.
So many years.
Yes, we've been doing this well. Which is why we're doing a weird thing this time.
Yeah, we're just kind of chatting about stuff.
Yes.
Yes, because 400 episodes plus 40 years of Transformers.
That's right, 40 years. Celebrate with a new
many years of Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
How?
I just turned 46 last week. I'm going to die soon.
And I'm...
We are old, yes.
I'm turning 39 today.
Oh, you haven't even broken 40. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yes.
I thought you'd already had your birthday, but I guess like weeks and times have been fuzzy lately.
I mean, we did last year.
Yeah. Now that we need to ramble and digress, we can't. We're not doing a regular episode of just things and stuff.
So
and we'll be talking
we,
about the movie.
We're going to do history because, I don't know, I have a lot of thoughts and perspective on history.
Yeah, so the I guess we could say you know, our earliest experiences with the Transformers. Since you guys were around for the beginning and I was not.
Wow.
Yeah, 94. How old was it? Oh, yeah, because I would have been 7.
One of the things, there was a lot of... Yeah, I was young enough that I don't know that I remember my first experience, but I do remember that the first thing that I rented from a video store that I got to pick out was a Betamax copy, because my father, to this day, has strong feelings about Betamax being the superior format.
Okay.
It was a Betamax copy of The Ultimate Doom.
Ooh.
So that was, and I feel like I didn't see a lot of season one when it was new, that I really just caught it mixed in with season two, because that was an episode that I hadn't seen a whole bunch of times. I had seen it before, but not like repeatedly like stuff eventually would get to be. But, you know, I like Skyfire. That's a fun episode. There's so much going on, and they keep reusing the whole plot about bringing Cybertron into Earth's orbit.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how I first heard about it, but I just had to check dates to be sure. I picked up the comic first. I think I got the very first issue.
Ooh.
Like, it must have been advertised in something else I was reading. Because I remember getting the comics... Or maybe it was like I got it from the second issue, but they still had the first issue in back the room or something. But I was like, I was very much into the comics, loving the comics. Oh, there's a cartoon! Yes!
Also a cartoon.
And everything that followed.
I mean, I was definitely I wasn't like a latchkey kid at 7, but I was definitely like, my parents worked and there was a lot of watching after school cartoons. I think that's why I started catching it with season two, was because that's when it was syndicated weekly, which also I got to watch a lot of those episodes in black and white the first time, because my grandparents did not get a color TV until some aunt or uncle of mine forced one upon them in the late 80s. I did get babysat a lot after school by grandparents, because it was, you know, a rural community.
You always left wondering why Starscream sounds different some of the time.
I will say that it was not until later that I noticed that Ironhide had a particular accent and wasn't just, you know, a normal guy speaking the way normal people do.
Yeah, just he's just on that ship with a bunch of Yankees.
Yeah, it's the one normal talking guy. Just the one guy who sounds normal on the ship with everybody else who's just a bunch of Yankees. I mean, some of them had weird other accents, as we were just saying. Like, it's the ones just randomly from the Bronx or Brooklyn.
Yeah. You know, Transformers was just, like, at the perfect time. Like, I'd seen He-Man and some other cartoons and Voltron and whatnot. But then I was... my brain, it was the perfect sponge when the cartoon started. It was
like, I did watch He-Man, and I did watch She-Ra, and I did watch GoBots. I definitely watched GoBots, but I don't, like, remember a lot of specifics except that I liked Turbo and
Crasher.
And at one point when I was like six, the TV station had some kind of contest where you could win a GoBot. And our parents entered both me and my little sister, who was three at the time. And my sister won. And when they took us to pick, so she could pick one out, my mother, she gets to pick it. It's her toy, Jen. But I was trying to get her to pick Leader One because they had a Leader One in the box that you got to pick from, and she got spoons.
Oh.
Like, alas. You know, yeah, that was sad. But I mean, he's bright colored, so.
Yes.
But yeah, I was very much a cartoon kid.
I watched the cartoon, but I think I was more comic because I got it first.
I only really knew comics existed because people on TV sometimes read them.
Oh. No, it's like, because, I don't know, because an older cousin gave me, like, a pile of, like, Star Wars and some other old comics. ROM, for one thing, where I read what little of ROM I've read. I need to get those new omnibuses.
Yeah.
Have they finished putting those out?
I think the third one is out maybe this month.
Well, then hopefully the first two are still easy to find.
And then I think they're also going to put them out in these smaller epic collections, which are like 20 episodes or 20 issues instead of like 30.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I could reread the comics. It was harder to rewatch the episodes, although it was in syndication a lot. But
well, you know, that Betamax player... It was also a recorder.
Ooh.
I never recorded Transformers because I don't think we had a VCR for quite a while. Until eventually, yes, and I got some tapes or something. But the movie I rewatched a bunch.
I was actually pretty distraught back in, I think it was 1995 or 1996, when my father finally gave up on the possibility of getting the Betamax player repaired. And he finally got rid of all the old Betamax tapes. And this was when we were not quite yet, like, DVDs weren't really a thing yet. So we hadn't reached the point where there were just, like, entire season sets of everything available being dumped into the market. So those tapes that we had in there that had been recorded, they would have just been, like, blocks of afternoon cartoons, and I was like, but how will I ever get to see Silverhawks again if we're throwing out these tapes? Like, there could be so much stuff on these tapes that will be lost now, because I was like 16 or 17 and didn't know what was ahead of us as a media market. That, you know, now you can just... I mean, there was a period where all that stuff was just available, and now it's not so much anymore because... Well, I mean, I say that, but Amazon's freebie streaming service has the Cartoon Rewind channel, which will just show all of Silverhawks, specifically, like, in a huge two-day or so block. But yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot of commercials and stuff that would have been really fun to pull off some of those tapes. I'm assuming they're... now I'm mad because there could have been some kid video on there. And that would have actually been extremely important to have, especially Betamax quality copies of. But yeah, there was... We used to watch a lot of afternoon cartoons, and that's the thing, is because my dad was usually not home then, he would record the afternoon cartoon blocks for himself because he really liked, like, Thundercats. I've been told that back when it was, like, newly running, that my father would religiously get up to watch Thundar the Barbarian on Saturday mornings. So...
Yeah, I do remember watching Thunder Barbarian. It's like, oh, I think, in theory, maybe I figured out how I found about it. The G.I. Joe cartoon was the year before Transformers.
Yes.
I'd been watching that, or at least the miniseries and stuff. So I was probably watching that and saw an advertisement for the comic book, because they had cartoon commercials for the comic book.
Yes.
That's a crazy thing to think about.
Yeah, I was definitely...
And that got me into the comic.
Definitely watching G.I. Joe at the time, too. But yeah, I don't know if I just wasn't paying attention to the comics and the checkout lines or what, but comics kind of passed me by. I actually have... There was this one moment that feels like if I had looked... If I had done something a little differently... Not to say that my life would have changed, but my life would have changed sooner, which was at one point, probably about 1989. I think it was 1989, because at some point I went and looked up some stuff and compared some stuff and figured out about what issue would have been on the stands at this point. But there was a point in the late 80s when I... was going with my mother to the mall because she had some stuff to do at the DMV. And there was like a newsstand kind of store across the hall. And I ended up finding some comics there. But because I was a child, I felt that it would be best to stick to the children's comics. So I was looking at the children's comics. So what I actually ended up getting was an issue of the Archie Ninja Turtles, specifically the one with Man Ray, which probably rings a lot of bells for people who are familiar with
Archie Ninja Turtle Adventures. I had that issue.
And an issue of the Alf comic, which I think was...
Alf the comic? I mean, that isn't a shock, but...
Yeah, so I got the Alf... Oh yeah, Alf had a... I don't know how it's sold, and Rob can probably speak more to the Alf comics history than I could.
It sold well enough that it outlived the show.
Yeah. Oh.
And according to Dan Slott, who was like an intern at Marvel in like the late 80s, early 90s, they got a lot of... mail from, let's say, government institutions about Alf.
Okay.
Oh, no.
What?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Like, communications of what type? Like, you're getting too close to things?
No. Not people who were necessarily... let's just say people who were guests of government institutions.
Okay. I understand what you mean.
Different
now.
Kind of institutions.
You're not talking about like Men in Black knocking on their door. You're talking about
something different entirely. I would say these men were in white.
Okay, fair. But yes, I want to say that it was the issue with the Ex-Melmacians. Which was a big X-Men spoof, and of course I had no idea who the X-Men were, so that was introduction to something else entirely. But I feel like if I had looked up to where the more mainstream, I don't think Alf was under Star. I'm pretty sure.
It was at various points, but I think it may have predated Star, and then it outlived Star.
That's, yeah, because Star...
But I think at some point it was in Star.
Yeah. But I feel like if I had looked up at the mainstream comics and seen that there was a Transformers comic at that point, because I was at a point where I had sort of lost touch with Transformers, but more just because there wasn't much except the toy line, and we were not a family of extensive financial means, so I had, like, two Ninja Turtles.
See, this temporally is about where I come in.
And this, I will say, though, I did some figures, and I'm pretty sure the issue that would have been on the shelf at the time would have been the issue with the cover of Megatron shooting Ratchet just as Simon Ooh. Furman took over, which would have completely blown my mind at that age as someone who had loved Transformers but kind of lost touch with it. So fortunately, maybe unfortunately, I did not have my mind blown by that until I was like 14 instead of 10.
The Transformers will return after these messages. We now return to the Transformers.
But yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so yeah, I'm a little younger than you guys, so I sort of was around that age sort of when the thing, when it was in decline. I caught some of the, like, Tommy Kennedy reruns on TV.
I used to get up to watch those at 6:30 in the morning. No one else was up in my house. It was just me sitting 3 feet from the TV with my orange cat, who was a female named Garfield, and she would sit next to me and watch. I remember her watching, like, Cyclonus fly across the screen and just seeing her little head watch him.
So that, for the uninitiated, they sort of repackaged earlier episodes of the Transformers with interstitials of this live-action kid talking to, like, a giant Optimus Prime puppet out in, like, the wastelands.
Yes. Yeah.
I was like, oh boy, Optimus Prime, tell us about the Dinobots. Well, Tommy, they're some weird guys.
I'm sure some of that has to be on YouTube at this point. So,
oh, it's 100% on YouTube. Well, in fact, recently, last decade or so, they found Tommy Kennedy.
Yeah, I remember that.
He was just like, you know, he's like a normal guy who did like some acting in the 80s. I think he was on like an episode of Highway to Heaven or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a good bit of it on YouTube. So if you are listening and you are not familiar with that, absolutely look it up. It is wild.
It is charming.
And
it's
in fact,
super cool.
I did get an 89 issue of the comic. Which was, in fact, Furman's first issue. One before the one where he shoots Ratchet.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the one that opens with Ratchet, like, daydreaming about, like, all these dead Autobots coming to kill him.
God, I love that issue. Like, when I was rereading it last year, I was like, this is so good.
And so I sort of, like, found a couple, like, Budiansky, like, mid-period Budiansky, like, back issues in, like, the dollar bins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first one with the Pretenders, where Optimus Prime's in the video game and thinks he's a video game character.
Yes!
The one with the Mechanibals.
Oh, that's fun.
Oh, yeah.
The one with Real Vision, which is also kind of like an early Optimus Prime Megatron thing.
Real Vision?
Except we've also got... it's part of the Underbase issues.
Okay.
They're talking about how like we're getting flashbacks to how we met Boltax.
Yes.
But because it's right, but because it's like 1988, we're selling new toys, so we've got like the Trigger Cons and the Trigger Bots in there.
Yes.
I have the issue with the Road Jammers.
Oh, that's a good one.
The issue where the Throttlebots' minds get put into toy cars and they're hunted down by the Predacons.
Yeah, that one was weird.
So I had the weird ones. The Circuit Breaker one with Skull Grin and the sexy Bob Budiansky cover.
Oh, yeah, and they're going to make a movie.
Yes. I'm trying to think. And I had one really early one, which was the number 8 with the Dinobots on the cover.
Okay, yeah, that's a
so
really...
like a real smattering of issues there.
Mm-hmm.
And out of order, they made almost absolutely no sense.
I can... When I ended up collecting them, it was kind of like that. So, though I ended up getting a lot of early issues pretty early on, and conveniently one of my first... When I finally... This is a whole story that I could tell of, like, my rediscovering and what I think of as the start of my adult fandom. And I think probably a lot of... I wrote a lot of it down earlier this year... for James Roberts' big fanzine retrospective. So I thought about that a lot. And when I finally was like, yes, this is a thing I'm going to start, you know, I am going to become a person who reads comics instead of a person who reads the Encyclopedia of Superheroes from the school library and aspires to become a person who reads comics. And I went to the used bookstore and started going through their back issues and found some Transformers stuff. And I got a full set of the Transformers Universe books.
Ooh.
So with all the bios. And that was really helpful because I could be like, oh, right, I remember that guy. Here's that guy. You know, it was very a useful reference for somebody like... refiring those synapses and also being who is the Skids guy?
Yeah, even if I wasn't rereading the comics, rereading those bios and that book, like, that was my Bible.
Yeah, so that was really helpful. But yeah, most of the stuff that I ended up finding at first, I didn't find the Furman stuff for a while in those back issues, but I found some... I want to say... Return to Cybertron, the Blaster and Strax's story. I want to say
I had that one too.
I want to say that was among the first batch that I found at Half Price Books, at McKay Used Books in Centerville, Virginia, as a scruffy teen. But yeah, I grew away from it. It didn't help that when I was 10... my family moved a few times because my father's grad work had kind of dried up. We ended up in North Carolina for about a year and a half, and then we ended up in the DC area. But that was at a very formative time for me, so my things got kind of jumbled, and I would feel very kind of disconnected from the stuff I had, you know, been involved with previously, and it was these very sort of disjointed times for me. So once I got, we got sort of settled down again, and after a couple years, I would say I was probably in that Toys R Us, and I still remember it was the Fair Lakes Toys R Us in Fairfax, Virginia. And we were probably there because my dad was probably looking for Star Trek Next Generation figures. But I was walking through the action figures and I saw, and it was before Christmas, so I'm pretty sure it was it would have been December 92. It was early in December because I had a party. I was invited to a party that night, which was huge because I was a freshman in high school. But there was the first wave of Generation 2. So there was, the silver G2 Grimlock from that first run they did before he turned turquoise and then blue. And there were the cars. And I was all those connections that had been disconnected through those years of moving and going through puberty and just all of the social weirdness that comes along with that. And I could go deeper and say that there's also just the sort of disjointedness of going through it's the phrase that people like to use these days, compulsory heterosexuality, when you know, being a queer child who did not yet realize and would not realize for a while just to what degree she was a queer child. But it was like all of those connections that had been severed in those years just clicked right back into place. And I was just this little scrawny 14-year-old standing there in the Toys R Us in like probably a leather jacket and an Alice in Chains t-shirt and badly black dyed hair cut like a Romulan. And looking at the shelf and just, like, the light came back. And it's like, I remember how much all of this meant to me. Like, this was everything to me when I was a kid. Like, there was a point when I was, like, 8 years old and I was trying to write, like, Rebirth continuate, like, season 4 fan fiction on the little crummy computer that we had. And it was like, suddenly all of this stuff that had meant so much to me just clicked right back into place. And, you know, I went home and I said something to my father and he was like, well, you know, Sci-Fi Channel, like, we have cable now. Someone on cable probably is showing the old cartoon. And sure enough, the first episode that I caught was The God Gambit. Which is a pretty solid episode. It's one of those episodes where whenever people are like, I don't like things being political now, it's like, this is an entire episode of the original Transformers cartoon that's about how organized religion is sketchy. It's like, so, and then, you know, within a week, I had dug up a bunch of back issues at the used bookstore, and yeah, that was it. It was all over for me. I was a nerd.
Just like, I've got to attend to a dog here. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Bark. So I can rail. I skipped over G2 somehow.
You and so many other people, I will tell you, because the way the fandom changed when Beast Wars started was just, it was total thing. So lots of people sat out G2.
We'll get into Beast Wars, but G2, it's like, I actually think I saw ads for it in other comics. I mean, I wasn't reading a lot of comics, but like issue 80 in a 4-issue limited series ended, and it's like, yes, that's good. It's done. I would love more. And then G2 happened, and it's like, I kind of don't care.
Aww.
I was into anime at that point.
You're busy being a cool teenager.
Teenager, yes.
I mean, the other thing that was on Sci-Fi Channel in the mornings in the 90s was Robotech. So I also became into anime at the time, at the same time.
Again, I was already into that.
Really?
Actually, that's a weird question. When did I first realize anime was anime? I guess it was probably when I started going to Blockbuster Dubai or rent stuff.
And there was a separate section. It was just anime.
Yeah. Yeah, or I figured out before that. Because, well, like, when I originally watched Robotech and Voltron and Transor Z, it's like, I didn't know.
Apparently, Generation 2 as a toy line did badly enough that it was later considered, like, a cautionary tale.
That's weird.
Because I mentioned...
I mean, I wasn't buying the toys, but... I don't actually remember seeing... G2 toys, but again, I wasn't reading the comics, so I wasn't looking for the toys.
That, the intro that Aaron Archer did at TFCon for that one panel where I was joking that he said that he had survived G2, or he had lived through G2 in a way, in a tone that just made it sound like...
I lived
it
through
G2. It was like it was 9/11, literally like it was 9/11, and I brought that up, and he said that, well, Generation 2 was just... like so bad from a toy company sales perspective that it was considered like a cautionary tale. So I was like, ah, so it actually was kind of that bad for toy industry people, because I don't know, I was buying it.
And I've returned to say that I too, like, that's when I really got into it. Like, I had some scattered like late G1 toys, but G2 is when I really got into it. I liked the new color schemes and the big missile launchers. And I really liked...
Oh, you were a G2 child.
I
was born in 85, so like when it hit in 92, I was like 7.
I mean, again, when I was little, I'm always like, well, we didn't have a lot of money, But I realized that a lot of it, too, was that while my parents aspired to be pretty progressive, I was definitely bought things on a very gendered basis. So I'm like, oh, well, we didn't have a lot of... I had fucking Paradise Estates. I had, which was the Fortress Maximus of My Little Pony. Yeah. I had Paradise Estates. I had Glitter and Gold Gem. You know, we... I mean, yes, we lived in a trailer in Alabama. We didn't have a lot of money, but mostly... I do have a photo of myself, and it probably would have been when I was about 8, but one Christmas I did actually get some Transformers, and I had a boxed... I'm sitting there, and I had hair down to my rear end, because I just... Oh. I did when I was a kid. And I'm sitting there on Christmas morning with a boxed Punch Counter Punch in my lap, and I'm lining up the little race car MicroMasters on top of the box. So I had those when I was a kid, but mostly I had a cousin Bubba who I hung out with a good bit as a kid because he also got babysat by our grandparents a lot. And he had... like Ultra Magnus. I got a hand-me-down Mirage from him at one point. And most of the Transformers I got to play with were his. But when, you know, Generation 2 was when I had babysitting money. And so I had more money and more agency to pick things out for myself. So I had a good bit. I had, you know, Megatron, like Tank Megatron, and also smaller Tank Megatron.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot from the first year, but I had for the second year I got the crazy colored combiner teams.
Yes, those were so fun.
And I feel that that's a big reason why I can never remember which aerial bot is which, because the colors I know for them are all the wrong ones.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like,
that's
oh yeah, fair. Air Raid. He's the guy with like the
Spider-Man webbing.
Skydive.
Yeah.
Yeah, Skydive's the guy with the Spider-Man webs, right?
And there's the one that breaks apart.
Yes. That's that is Slingshot.
I really want to talk to someone who was there at the time and ask if that was intentionally based on his personality.
He was the guy who was gold.
Because he would definitely be the one who they all agree on this new color scheme, and he shows up in solid gold. Like, that is absolutely in character, but I don't know how much they were thinking about the characters, but maybe they were. I mean, they had to write it on the packaging.
And yeah,
speaking
of
toy memories, my grandparents spoiled the crap out of me.
That was kind of how my cousin Bubba got so much stuff, because my parents were doing better enough from some of their siblings that my cousins sometimes got spoiled more so by grandparents because they were struggling a little more than my family was.
Yeah, no, like the first year I didn't get a lot, but I had like Optimus and some cars, and most of the Decepticons, I think. But like after that, my grandparents got me almost everything for the next couple of years as it petered off and it stopped. But one specific memory is waiting before Christmas, like a week or two before Christmas, in a Sears in the snow for a very, very large box that I knew was going to be my Christmas present, and I think possibly my only Christmas present that year, Fortress Maximus.
Ooh.
Yes. Like, most of their toys, like, I vaguely remember, like, getting GoBots one birthday or something weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but the Fortress Maximus, I very much remember getting that toy singular because it was in the snow. And it was a nice, fun day. Because it was snowing, not super heavy, but enough that there was a couple inches already on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And going home and having to wait for Christmas to actually open it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was only, like, a week or two later or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that was fun. And then eventually selling that Fortress Maximus in college to buy a bigger CRT monitor. I think it was like a 30-inch or something.
Oh, no.
Because, like, my old one was kind of small. And, like, I met a guy at college who also liked Transformers and wanted a Fortress Maximus. I had everything included except for, like, one tiny gun. For $400, I sold it.
I mean, that's good money.
And spent almost all of that on the new monitor. Which was a CRT and completely useless. And I don't even think it lasted that long. Like, maybe only lasted, like, 3 years or something.
That is unfortunate.
Plus, it was heavy as fuck.
Well, yes, they were.
But, like, it's weird that I have such special memories about getting that toy. And it's the toy that I kind of care the least about because it was fucking huge. And I haven't bought the new Fortress Maximuses. Because if I do get a new Fortress Maximus, I want the IDW one that's shorter.
Yeah.
With the treads on the back.
Oh, there's that third-party one that they're finally doing.
There's a third-party one? Oh, I might have to find that then. But, yeah, toys, lots of toys, still in bins. I need to start selling some G1 ones. And I guess we can move into, wow, we could be going long. Beast Wars happened! What the fuck? That was weird at the time, but...
Well, Rob, you have more G2 to mention.
Well, yeah, I mean, just, you know, I really like sort of the late period stuff from G2 where, you know, the toys started to have, like, joints and stuff. So you have the laser rods and the cyber jets.
Yeah.
Joint? Knees? Why do Transformers need knees?
And then, so, you know, G2 disappeared, and I thought, okay, well, that's it for Transformers. And then
R.I.P. Transformers.
And then I saw the ads for Beast Wars, and I, like, that first... you know, it had a little bit of CG, and I was fascinated by, like, computer animation. Which you got a little bit of in the G2 with the Cybernet Space Cube and the commercials. Where you had
Cybernet Space Cube.
Very brief and very clunky animations of the Transformers in there.
Yeah. I did have... So I was watching it on Sci-Fi Channel, and then they pulled out the episodes that they put into G2... And I got this little handheld television that took four AA batteries. And I would use that because the thing is, G2 came on during my bus ride home. I had that so I could watch it on the ride home. I also watched a lot of Exo Squad on that. And I remember very specifically the morning of a big field trip that we were taking to Mount Vernon. I got to see the first airing of the Tick versus the Tick, which is the evil midnight bomber, what bombs at midnight episode. So because I was hyper fixated enough that even if I couldn't watch the entire episode of G2, I needed to at least know what episode was on. Like, I know there was a point I was hanging out with my friends after school, and I pulled out the TV and I turned it on for a second, and I heard Starscream say something about, "It's a shame that none of us here speaks ancient Autobot." I said, "Okay, Cosmic Rust, close it up, put it back in my pocket." But yeah, the CG with Beast Wars, I mean, that was only the second major broadcast show, like, TV series to be done entirely in CG.
And so, yeah, when, you know, I saw that ad and, you know, in the beginning came the beasts and all the creeps, crawls, and flies. But nature lies. They're robots in disguise. Beast Wars! And then, you know,
It was a really good ad.
And I always really liked the animal guys, which they didn't really have in Generation 2. You had the Dinobots, and that was about it.
Yeah. I mean, I was involved in fandom by then. I wasn't quite online. I got online shortly after Beast Wars started. And I think it's hard to say exactly whether the fandom changed as much as it did because of Beast Wars or because of the internet. And I think it was a lot of both. I think it was a lot of people who grew up with G1 going away to college and suddenly having internet access in their dorms. And also Beast Wars reminding them, giving them that moment that I had had in that Toys R Us that, oh yeah, this was, remember this thing you used that used to mean everything to you. And, but I will just say that there had already been a lot of discourse in the fan community over Megatron becoming a tank. So Megatron becoming an alligator was just absolutely scandalous.
Oh, yes, but he's just an alligator, and Optimus was a bat.
There was so much gun, not tank discourse. It was...
Well, I mean, the amusing thing for me is that I knew about the Beast Wars toys, and I had a couple of Beast Wars toys, and I did know there was going to be a show.
Mm-hmm.
But, I was a big watcher of YTV, which was basically Canada's answer to Nickelodeon.
Yay, Canada!
And they were advertising some new show called Beasties.
Beasties!
And I didn't really know anything about it, but they said it was from the same guys who did Reboot. And Reboot was another computer animated show that I was really interested in, so I thought I'll try it out. Now the credits start going, then I'm like, oh, that's what this is. Oh my.
It's Optimus Primal and Megatron.
Because you couldn't put war in the name of Canadian TV shows for kids.
Yeah.
You could show a lot of violence, but you couldn't actually call the show Beast Wars. It had to be Beasties.
It was a big Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles situation.
In fact, the same company made that show War Planets, which had to be redubbed Shadow Raiders in Canada.
I liked to joke at the time that they had to call it Planeties. But sadly, that was not the case.
I mean, I almost wonder if it was deliberate that they were forced to change the name and pick the goofiest name possible.
I mean, that's not... It's just sort of generic.
They could call it Beast Planet or Beast World.
No, Shadow Raiders. Yeah, it just sounds sort of generic.
Oh, no, I mean Beasties.
Yeah.
No, Shadow Raiders were actually a specific thing on the show.
Yeah, whereas Beasties kind of Beasties seems like they found out the day before that they had to change it and just did the best they could with what they had available.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a lot of truck not monkey discourse.
And see, we didn't have like a home computer until fairly, I'm going to say, I don't know, 2000, 2001. We didn't have the internet, so I my exposure to the fandom was about an hour a week at the library.
Ooh.
I didn't even have that. It's like I didn't get a computer for the longest time, and internet even further after that. Why would I think... I missed all the ATT whatever bullshit
so
days.
So what happened for me...
They're a mystery to me.
What happened for me was that in the comics, because I was reading the G2 comics, and in the letters pages, which I don't know if those are preserved anywhere except various long boxes in people's storage... but you would have people organizing fanzines and fan clubs. And so really all you needed to do back in the day is find Tony Buchanan's contact information. Because once you got in touch with Tony Buchanan, you were in the fandom. Because he did a fanzine called Auto Update. Which is what I like to classify as a newsletter-style fanzine. So it had a little bit of art, but not really so much fiction. It was more like little articles. But it also had sort of a classified ad-style listing of other fanzines. So once you got auto-update, that told you where to get everyone else's fanzine. And also told you where BotCon existed. And, you know, I think the registration page, if I dig around, I could probably find the ads for BotCon 94. So I knew that was happening, but I wasn't quite, able to go off on my own enough to go to that one. But I was aware of it before the internet because I had... from these letter pages from the comics, I had managed to get in touch with the zine community. So I didn't really have internet until 97. But I went to BotCon 95 and 96 and, you know, ran into people who I had become pen pals with or racked up big long distance phone charges talking to. So yeah, that was like early fan community days. So I first found out about the pilot. So they aired the pilot to Beast Wars a little early. It was in like April.
Yes.
And I found out about that because I saw the listing in TV Guide.
Sorry, they used to send you a magazine and it would tell you what was going to be on TV.
Yes.
That was the only way to find out what was going to be on TV.
And if there was anything my little, you know, ADHD, my little neurodiverse brain loved, it was schedule grids.
That's true.
I don't yes. know if either of you have any experience with, like, early 90s satellite TV.
No. Not really, no.
My grand...
No, always cable until I moved up to New York.
My paternal grandmother had one. And we only really got down to visit her a couple times a year because at that point, you know, we were in Virginia, they were in Alabama. And a lot... I would sometimes get left behind to watch the dogs. But when I went down there, I learned to program this thing on my own. And the thing about this is you get this... If you thought TV Guide had a big complicated schedule, this thing was like... It was on steroids. It was like the schedule book for Origins. It was just pages and pages because first you'd have to like send... You'd have to go to the right satellite... And then each satellite
had
its...
satellites? What?
You had to pick the satellite. And then you had to go find the right channel on the satellite. But one of the fun things about that, and this was not something I got to take advantage of for this sort of purpose, but you could do some evil with this thing. Because a lot of those feeds, some of the feeds you could pick up were the broadcast feeds for the station. So the notorious Alt-Toys Transformers spoiler about Dinobot, about Code of Hero, what happened was that person had this kind of satellite service. And so they got to see the episodes a day in advance because they got the feed that was meant for the station to record for broadcast.
Ooh.
So I did get to see some Exo Squad episodes a day early, but like I was not on the internet at that point and had no one to spoil these random Exo Squad episodes for. But yeah, you could see stuff early, but again, it was like that only really became a problem once it overlapped with the internet, and not long after that, the you know the Dish TV model. That was more cable-like. But yeah, it was extremely complicated. And I absolutely sat myself down and figured that out when I was like 15, 14, 15. And I figured out how to get to the right station so I could watch G2 or I could watch Exo Squad. But yeah, it was that was a whole complicated thing back in the day. But you could get episodes a day early and you could spoil everyone on Alt-Toys Transformers about the ending of Code of Hero if you were a huge asshole.
See, I like my we didn't really have the internet so much as we had the web, and we didn't understand what the internet was.
There was
one time,
as far as, you know,
my library computer goes.
There was one time when I was in high school when I went to the school computer lab and just tried typing Alt-Toys Transformers into the address bar, and it didn't work, and I was like, well, shoot.
Same. I couldn't, like, I went to, like, Dave Van Domelen's Transformers website, which I think is still around.
I think so.
And still being updated. Mm-hmm. God bless Dave Van Domelen, which I'm probably massacring the pronunciation of his name. But you know, the people, you know, you talk about like Alt-Toys Transformers, and I would have no idea what that was. Is that a website?
Yeah, people would talk about it in the fanzines. You know, it would come up in auto update that, you know, something had been posted, or he would like reprint something that had been posted on Alt-Toys Transformers. And I'm like, okay, I don't know anything about the internet. At one point, a guy in high school printed off all of Steve Stonebreaker's Alt-Toys Transformers FAQ. to try to impress me. I was a little impressed, but not sufficiently impressed.
For our younger viewers, that is FAQ, Frequently Asked Questions.
Yes, and it was 30-some pages, and at the time, that 30-some pages covered basically everything you would need to know about Transformers. It explained the Japanese exclusive series and explained how the UK got its own comic. And I think it was 37 printed pages. And I carried it around in a folder in my backpack so I could read through it.
It's pretty crazy to think that at the time there was about 10 years of Transformers history.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that stuff seemed like, you know, the stuff from like the 80s, that seemed ancient to me,
I know. About
Beast Wars or whatever. And now the something similarly old would be like The Last Knight.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
I know.
Don't hurt me like that, man. Yeah, I think about that sometimes. I mean, I even just think about the gap between when I kind of lost touch with it and when I got back into it. And I'm like, I've been in my apartment less time than that.
I think part of it is that all that stuff is so much more accessible than it used to be, which is a positive change.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think a lot of it, too, is the way you process, like the way you perceive time when you're younger.
Yes.
But also, yeah, everything is just more accessible now. I mean,
well, relatively more accessible.
You know, there's a big Transformers wiki with, you know, pictures and explanations of all the Japanese stuff in the UK comics.
And you can watch a bunch of series on YouTube, like G1 at least, and Rescue Bots and things. But and if you're trying to watch,
get the comics digitally, and
if you're trying to watch like a random episode of Headmasters, that's a little tricky, unless you want to spend $100 for the DVD set if you forgot to buy that.
I mean, you can put are they not on?
Hey, I got it for 40 Canadian.
Yeah. But the thing is, they're out there, like in like 1995. You know, you're getting a sketchy DVD from a dude, which may or may not contain pornography.
Yeah, I had notoriously, because one of the episodes on it did become one of ATT's biggest memes for a few years. Mm. But I had one of my friends who did a lot of art for my zine. He sent me a VHS tape that had, it was three, I think it was three raw episodes of Headmasters in Japanese. And I think it was like the first three or so. And then there was one episode of the English dub, which was Life Can Be Sacrificed for Peace on Earth. And then four dubbed episodes of Victory. So I got that in like late 95, early. I got it early enough before I went to my first BotCon that one of my pickups at my first BotCon was Leo Zack. Mm. Because I was like, but this was like the great Apocrypha. And I remember at one point in BotCon 96, the entertainment was notably lacking in the evening. So we kind of made our own entertainment. And at one point, somebody commandeered an old video cart like you had back then, because the CRTs were £100. They weren't 100, but they were like 30. And people just went and grabbed whatever tapes they happened to have. And I want to say it might have been Doug Glenn, but it may have been somebody else, had a tape that had that. David will know what show I'm talking about, but the one that's got that big schoolhouse transformation scene.
Is it Gumballgar? It's one of the Eldarun series. It's not a Brave robot. It's the other also rants.
But we watched that, and I brought down that VHS tape, and everyone was just rapt, because this was the deep lore that none of us had seen before. And then when I brought that same VHS tape a few years later, when I had friends who were a little more casual, I'll say. Not like casual in the sense of not being into it, but in the sense of not being as reverent about it, not being maybe quite so, you know, serious about it. And the quality of the dub, everyone just was like, this is hilarious. This is the funniest thing.
Oh, it was probably Ghost Soarer.
Okay. Yeah, I think because it came up, because I think Discotech might have posted a clip of it on Blue Sky recently, and I was like, hey, I remember that. But yeah, we would just, this was like Apocrypha, the Japanese stuff and the UK stuff to a certain degree too, were just like the great Apocrypha. You would hear third hand stories of the Wreckers. And, you know, I picked up somewhere that Death's Head had been originally part of the UK comic, and then I started digging up Marvel UK stuff, and not Marvel Transformers UK stuff, I mean, like, you know, Motormouth and Killpower. Marvel UK stuff. Because it was adjacent enough. Hmm. But yeah, once the internet got to be a thing, it was... You got, I think I was definitely the kid, like a kid of the fandom, not like the only younger. I mean, there was Monzo, who was both slightly younger than me and also got to go to 94. So that was a challenge. Challenging my status as the kid. But you know, everybody was like college age and I was mid high school. And then all the people my own age kind of caught up with Beast Wars.
Hmm. Yeah, and yeah, I was super into Beast Wars, especially since I was like very much into like animals and weird animals.
Ah, yes, zoo books.
Yes,
Manterror was such a good toy.
Oh, Manterror. I mean, I loved all the weird bugs they made.
Mm-hmm. I was always more of a fiction person, so I was firmly Truck Nut Monkey until, but I gave the show a chance because it was still Transformers and I was still going to see what it was.
Oh yeah.
And the show was just so good that I was like, well, I guess I can allow this.
Yeah, the writing was as good as I remember G1 being when I was a small child.
I mean,
also I wasn't collecting Beast Wars toys at all, so it's like, hey, I'll just watch the show. The show was fun,
and you know, even though it was again only 10 years old at that point, it seemed like this crazy thing when Beast Wars made references to, you know, the original show and, you know, Starscream's ghost,
like Starscream.
Yes.
And Unicron.
The agenda was just mind blowing. That still might be the peak of Transformers fiction for me.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I remember seeing the preview for the Beast Machines, the, like, you know, coming next week preview for the Beast Machines episode that had the key to Vector Sigma.
Ooh.
And I was just like, holy shit! It's the key to Vector Sigma! Because, I mean, at the time,
oh, sure,
we didn't get stuff referenced like that. It was few and far between. Yeah. Because, I mean, for one thing, you couldn't expect anyone to have gotten access to any of that stuff. I mean, when Beast Wars came out, how was Bob Forward or Larry DiTillio going to go back and watch G1?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't even on Sci-Fi Channel anymore at that point. So, yeah, there was a point where I traded a bootleg of my own copy of Transformers the Movie for G2 Smokescreen and Dreadwing. Ooh. They were loose, though, but still.
Mm.
Still remains. These things were valuable for quite some time because, I mean, again, we are in an age where that stuff is abundant, that like it never used to be.
And yeah, I think that's a good segue so we can go from the past and now move into the present and the latest and perhaps greatest Transformers movie, Transformers 1, which we've all now seen in a movie theater.
It's so good.
It is really good.
So I guess this will be the spoiler section.
Yes.
Spoiler-ish, we're not going to go through beat by beat or anything. Just
we will save that for a Patreon thoughts. once it's available. Oh, on home media, but
when we can dissect it.
You know, I was not taking notes in the movie theater like Gene Shalit.
Yes, yeah, no. I will personally be purchasing the nicest possible physical copy of this movie once it's available. I'm going to get like the 4K steelbook version of this movie.
Yes.
Yeah, it was real good. It was pretty gay. It was definitely very gay.
Easy to imply, lots of gay, very little explicit gay, but oh wow, is it easy to read. And PAX and D16 are just gay for each other.
Yes, also.
And make it everyone else's problem.
As a fellow lesbian friend pointed out, Alita 1 definitely has very butch energy because she has no patience for any of the guys and she just wants to punch things.
Yeah.
Plus also, you know, Scarlett Johansson's always a little husky voiced.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, mostly just the no patience for the guys. Just wants to punch. Mm-hmm. She's just so punchy. She just wanted to punch everything. And honestly, that's so relatable. Yeah, it was... Man, and it's... You know, I go into something like that. Mm-hmm. Anytime there's a big mass marketed, like something that's not just marketed direct to the fandom, but something that's like marketed to a big umbrella like this, to the big tent. And I'm like, okay, how deep are they gonna go with this? And just right up front, they're like, in the beginning, there was Primus. And I'm like, well, shit.
Yes. Here's Primus. Here's his toy.
Here's the 13. Yeah, I still have that toy, like, hanging out here. In a place protected from being chewed on by cats, but...
I mean, I saw the original trailer and think, did I see... I don't think I saw all the trailers, which... None of which were particularly great. I don't remember mentioning the 13. I mean, we knew, like, Alpha Trion was going to be there because he was in some of the trailers.
I think our pal David Walkie Willis was sort of like... going through those trailers like the Zapruder movie and could tell you that the 13 were in them.
Yes.
But that wasn't something they were mentioning in the trailers.
No. Yes. It was definitely like a lot more lore intensive. I mean, you could kind of get the impression because it did seem like Alpha Trion was definitely something mythical.
Something, things from the past and things. It's like, okay, we're going to do something about it. But I didn't expect it was going to be exactly basically what we've already had, with a few twists.
And just right up front.
Yeah.
I do like that if you're going to have, because, I mean, of course, as we all know, Orion Pax has been presented as having several different jobs in the past. He was a dock worker. He was a archivist.
See our Patreon episode.
Yes, he was an archivist. He was a cop. And I like that it does start out with him digging through old records. Because while it has him... being a miner and, you know, being a labor class alongside Megatron, because Megatron is usually starts out as labor class in these stories.
Yes.
But it still has him having that, like, intellectual curiosity of an archivist. And this, you know, he's doing it to help find the Matrix, but also because he's just, you know, he values these old stories. And I like that. I think that's important about him, is that he, you know, have an interest in that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was good. It was so good. So good.
It's a really well-made movie. The animation is really gorgeous.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I just love the realization of what Cybertron and Iacon looks like. The organic bits are a little weird, but, like, everything is just so neat. Like, the surface quake is like Primus skin crawling.
Yeah,
he's got
like
an itch.
Primus stretching. You know, but, B does not lose his voice, so that was nice.
That's a big plus.
Because I was going to be so mad. I was saying ahead of time, and I actually had some of our friends, because there were so many opportunities to see it early. But the actual...
Yes, not for me, but yes. Yeah.
For those of us in America, and I guess also the UK, Though the UK doesn't have it yet.
Well, yeah, there were some places that had it a week ahead.
But, yeah.
But there were a bunch of showings and things.
There were some showings, like, on the 14th. Shows. But yeah, it was the actual proper release date, considering that it was Thursday, so it was actually the 19th, and that was my birthday.
Ooh.
And it would have been like unwrapping my birthday present early. I didn't want to unwrap my birthday present early. I wanted to wait for my birthday. But I did have some of our friends who had seen it early at some of the preview screenings who were like, if you want me to tell you, just let me know. I was like, no, don't tell me if he loses his voice or not. Because I was going to be so mad.
Yes.
Because I'm just very tired of that whole conceits, and I would like to never go back to it again. Mm-hmm.
And I guess that brings us to the voice acting, which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone was really good. I did feel like there's the scene where Pax is giving the big speech to the miners after he's got his cog. And that, I guess I've been spoiled for Peter Cullen speechifying. Because I don't think he was quite there yet, but to be fair, he did just go through puberty.
That works.
So
it's basically it's his first big speech.
And also Hemsworth is wrestling with that accent a little bit. He's pretty good at keeping it under wraps, but
It works for me. Like
it's always threatening to come out.
Yes.
Yeah. D16 was so good.
Oh yes, Brian Tyree Henry.
He was so good. Starscream telling him to hit him again. It's just like, oh no.
Oh no. Yeah, that relationship starts real weird.
Steve Buscemi.
And then Megatron gets a D16 gets a hate boner. Gets a rage boner. His gun coming out.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so good.
Shockwave being a joke, kind of disappointing, but
yeah.
He can do more in the sequel.
It's fine. Yeah.
And just all the little background characters. I'm sure all of our friends at the wiki are going to have.
Oh yes.
Trauma.
Oh yeah, digging around all the little guys, all the cogless are fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's nice seeing. Oh hey, that's Hound, and there's Jazz, and that looks like Ratchet.
And that I thought was Hound, but I think it's Moonracer, it turns out to be, sure.
Yeah,
I think there's a Hound and a Moonracer, because there's definitely a Hound, because he's getting a Blocky's figure, and he is clearly labeled as Hound.
But like, one but we see more one. Often is like, got a Hound head, but it's a slightly different, more rounded body.
Mm. Yeah.
It turns out, I think that's Moonracer or something.
She was labeled in some...
Which I didn't realize until she spoke. It's like, oh, that's not Hound.
You did get a lot of Arachnid, which I thought was really cool.
Yes! Yeah. Odd choice, but wonderful.
You know, if you're gonna have... See, that's... I've heard some people saying that Black Arachnia would have been a more, like, recognized one. But see, Black Arachnia is when you want the creepy spider lady to have moral complexity. And when you want the creepy spider lady to just be a monster, that's Arachnid. Yeah. Arachnid is terrible. She's completely irredeemable as a person.
And yet this Arachnid isn't as creepy as the original Arachnid.
No. But no, she does seem pretty irredeemable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Sentinel Prime's extremely fascist wings. Just no one good has wings like that. People with wings like that think they're the good guy and absolutely are not.
Yeah, he's very, well, not that I've actually seen it, Homelander.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely those kind of vibes.
Mega asshole.
Yes.
Oh yeah, the great John Hamm. Now question, is this Sentinel Prime the biggest bastard of all... The bastardly Sentinel Primes.
Yes.
I mean...
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like if given the opportunity, the animated one could possibly rise to this level, but he was
he's maybe the least bastardly of them.
The animated one was more of an asshole as a person to deal with, but he wasn't actually evil.
No.
Yeah.
He's just a massive jerk.
He probably wouldn't sell out the entire planet for power.
No, he would sell out Optimus Minor, yes.
But man, D16 was the kid who finds out that his like the really good straight A honor student who finds out that his dad had an affair and just rejects all authority overnight.
Oh. Like, I mean, I know some people are saying that sort of he transitioned from the hero worship of Sentinel Prime to I must make Sentinel Prime's skull into my ashtray. But I think you've got to remember, it's a movie, and it's like an hour and a half long.
Yes.
Yeah, it did have to, like, the third act kind of condenses his character.
Things happen fast.
Way too fast.
I mean,
these characters do feel like they're at more of a, like, older teenager level of maturity.
Yeah, yes.
And that kind of thing can sometimes happen with a kid, where they find out that, you know, the authority figure it destroys their faith in the one authority figure, and it essentially destroys their faith in all authority.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely was what he felt like, but yeah, he got a rage boner with his gun. I can't not think of that as a rage boner.
It's so good. Wish more people would go on to see the movie.
Yeah, I mean, everybody who's seen it seems to really enjoy it. My millennial coworker went to see it, and
yeah, really good reviews. It's just a lot of movies this year haven't done well. A lot of them also have been crap.
This
one is good.
I feel like this one will have legs. I feel like animated movies, they'll have legs. I'm not terribly concerned.
Yeah. And I think, and I feel like if they did a September release, then, you know, the studio probably understands that they're looking for it to have legs, mm-hmm. to have, like, a slow, not make all its money out right out of the gate, but within, you know, especially once you get to home releases and all that. I mean, they may have this as a flagship title on Paramount Plus at some point, you know.
Mm. Yeah, the thing is, kids love going to the movies, and there should always be a kids movie in theaters.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is my philosophy of film.
Fair.
That, you know, if a kid says, I'd like to go to the movies, there should be a movie for him to see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I mean, unfortunately, sometimes that movie has, like, minions in it.
But,
and actually, I took my 7-year-old nephew to this one, and he really loved it. He was peppering me with questions about Transformers.
Yeah, my nephews, my nephews, and they really enjoyed it. So, my older nephew, who is 13 now, did feel that it needed more Unicron, and he's hoping that maybe future sequels may have more Unicron.
They did Primus, so
you can't do all the Unicron up front. You gotta like lead up. You gotta build up to Unicron.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, we still have to deal with the Quintessons, which is like the one noticeable big loose end in this movie. But
it was I don't know
how much of a loose end it is, because I don't think they're like permanently occupying Cybertron. They just come by every couple of whatever time units.
It does seem like they come very often, though.
But still, they don't seem to have a permanent settlement.
Yeah. So the message at the end was basically like, don't come back.
Yeah.
That was one of my disappointments with the film. Mm-hmm. I thought the Quintesson designs were actually really cool.
Yeah.
But they didn't do the face swapping thing.
Yeah.
It was neat that they were a lot more organic, though. It's always... Yes.
Like I said, I thought they were cool.
Like metal stuck over fleshy bits. It's creepy. I liked it, but...
I realize this is a long-established thing, but it's always been kind of weird when you have, like, Transformer settings where, like, mechanical life is one of the dominant life forms.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it is more...
I do like the mix when there's like giant lizardmen or whatever nonsense out there in space.
Yeah, it is. It does seem like they should be more of an aberration.
Mm.
Like, not completely unique, but less common.
Yeah, like, they're only, like, mechanical life forms should be, like, less than a quarter of giant aliens out there.
But yes. I like that they are well on their way towards carcinization.
Mm-hmm.
They are Crab. They are on their way to Crab.
Yeah, the design's good. It did bug me after I saw the movie. That's like, oh yeah, they only got one face. That's kind of weird.
They got lots of arms, though.
They didn't need to have, like, a rotating face. They did have lots of arms and tentacles. But it'd be like if they had more faces on different parts of their body. Like,
well, organic creatures wouldn't have that. It's a mechanical thing.
But they're biomechanical, is the thing. They've done something to themselves. They should be more horrific.
To give them all those tentacles. Tentacles. I mean, it's pretty horrific if you're robot people. It's all gross. They're all...
Yeah. Very good. Very fun. Need more people to see it. Need to own it. Expensive version on home media.
That's right.
Physical media. And need Transformers 2.
That's right. Yeah, yes. I just think that's the question. If they do a sequel, do they call it Transformers 2?
Or Transformers 1, 2?
Is it TWO or TOO?
I mean, if it's just Transformers 2, like Look Who's Talking 2 or Teen Wolf 2.
I mean, it could be Transformers 1, 2, like you had those Final Fantasy games, like Final Fantasy X 2, because none of the Final Fantasy games are actually sequels, they're all just standalones, so if you're doing a sequel to a specific one, it's not the next one in the series, it's a sequel to that one.
Or if it is a sequel, it's a sequel in a weird way. Like, one of the ones I think is a sequel to, like, a spin-off. I think that's what 12 was or something. I don't know. It's very weird.
Man, Megatron just tearing Sentinel Prime in half, huh?
Yes.
Super gruesome robot death in this.
They definitely only got a PG rating because it was robots. We're definitely back on the robot violence double standard here. Mm. Because yikes, that was cruel to him.
Yeah, the thing is,
but that's fine because he was Prime terrible.
Sacrifices himself to, stop Megatron from shooting Sentinel Prime in the head, and of course, in the process, gets a big gruesome hole blown in him. And then
We're at it, this is a true Transformer story because Optimus Prime dies.
It's true, but I like that he saves. A Sentinel Prime for what would probably be a fairly merciful death of, just getting immediately to the hideous, agonizing death of getting, wishboned. Richard Schiff in The Lost World Jurassic Park.
Getting jazzed in half.
Yes.
Jazz. That made me so mad because Jazz is genuinely has always been one of my favorite characters. And I was just kind of like, well, fuck this movie.
Hey, also loses some body parts in this movie, but survives.
Yes. Yeah, he gets to be in it. I was very happy that he was there and got to, do stuff, even though it wasn't really much stuff. Even though it was mostly just getting saved.
I like that they let us know how horribly gruesome it was, because we get, the horrified expression frozen on Sentinel Prime's face.
Yes. Yes.
Great performance from John Hamm there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was good in menacing and evil political asshole.
Mm-hmm. I just really like the part where Pax takes them up into the arch over the race, so he thinks acting like that's where they're gonna watch it. And they're all like, I did this for us, and it's just like, oh my god. It's so sweet. Aww. Doomed Yowie. It was good. I thought that B was an acceptable amount of annoying.
Yeah, he was like animated level B.
You know, they made him, they kept him from speaking for so long that he's got a lot of catching up to do. He's got a lot to make up for.
Yeah, he's good.
All that talking that he couldn't do for, 6 movies, now he can talk.
Yes.
Now he's got to do all that talking. I do wish that Alita 1 had gotten more of an arc, but I'm fine with her just being punchy. I'm glad that there was no, again, compulsory heterosexuality going on.
Well, B doesn't really have an arc, other than, I got stingers and I can kill dudes.
Yes, he also does not get much of an arc, so.
His arc is, I got out of the basement. That happens in 5 minutes.
Yes.
Mostly she just goes from really disliking the other main characters to thinking that Pax is actually all right. Mm. So, that's okay. I'm fine with a friendship arc. Friendship arcs are good.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't about them. It was about Pax and D16.
Yeah.
And then I guess that now brings us to the future. The future, Conan.
The future.
In the year 2005.
It's where we will spend the rest of our lives.
Well, on the horizon, not quite that near, but nearer than we think. The 30th anniversary of Beast Wars.
That's true. That's true. 30th anniversary. My God.
The 20th anniversary is what started this podcast.
That's true.
Sorry.
Beast Wars. We're back.
Yeah, I'm, I'm excited to see what's coming down the pike.
I guess it does sound like
Studio Series might, they're teasing a pivot to IDW.
Yes, please.
Which is kind of going back to the past again, but
it's a little late, but yes,
still
please.
Something. I mean, I was gonna say maybe that bodes well for Skybound bringing the comics back into print.
Weren't they? I thought somebody was gonna reprint them anyway.
But they sure are making like Studio Series gamer editions of toys from games that you cannot purchase.
You can't play. That doesn't make sense. You can play them,
but you cannot purchase them. Mm. I have determined, I did pick up an Xbox One copy of Transformers Devastation on physical media.
Ooh, yeah. Oh yeah, because we're getting the Devastation toys too, or some of them.
And I did confirm that it will install, and then proceeded to not actually have any time to play, and also discovered that like part of my pro controller got knocked off by the cats, and I need to find which chair it got knocked under. And anyway, I can confirm that you can install it if you get a used copy, but it is not available for purchase. But still, yeah, they're making toys of stuff that is not actually in print or purchasable, so that does not necessarily mean anything.
It would be neat if they brought the War for Cybertron games back, at least to the all single-player stuff.
Yeah.
But Devastation is really fun and simple. Put that fucker on Steam, please.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see the thing with the whole, I think it's Legacy of the Primes is the next toy line. I know it's Primes oriented, but I wasn't 100% certain on the title of it. I am open to Hasbro making me care about all of the 13 Primes. Because I know there are people who are like, oh, but nobody really cares about any of the Primes except, like, maybe one or two. I am open to them making me care about them. I am willing for them to get me to care about them, except for Liege Maximo, who is my patron deity.
the new designs in the movie, of which now there's cards that came out in China or something, I think, that have good pictures of all of them, and Liege Maximo was white. It's like, no, he should be green and look like a Loki. He does have the Loki horns, yes.
I mean, this is sort of a, like, ancient idealized representation of them, so
yeah,
I am sort of curious to see what they're going to do with everybody, and, you know, again, because there's a lot of it's a lot of, like, vague names and concepts they've thrown in there. And you can go back to Aaron's old Binder of Revelations and probably get some deeper lore. It seems like there's more than one female now.
Possibly.
Ooh, I'll take that.
Yeah, that
there
would be
Solus
nice.
Solus is definitely, I think there was.
But Solus is.
That would be better if there wasn't one and she was the one who died.
Yeah, that was not
the old
great.
We may not be doing that. May not be doing that shit anymore.
What that was not great. But then? I think Prima.
Yeah,
was
maybe
female, and some of them are sort of vague enough that they could be.
And they mostly didn't get voices, so hey, you could just... Alchemist Prime is now a lady. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be nice if they sort of diversify all that a little bit more.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is good that Solas Prime had, like, something... Like, her whole thing wasn't just being female. So that was nice. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that, seeing what they do with it. And like I said, I'm open to them making me care about it.
Yeah.
I am excited about new aerial bots.
Yeah, and we're also going to get the end of Earthspark, presumably.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we might get another season, or is it just the second half of season two?
Well, I think we're getting the next half, possibly the final half of the next season, and maybe like a wrap up movie or something.
That'd be neat.
And this is all very nebulous, because then we're apparently the next series will be Transformers Cyberworld.
Which, ooh, that's a very 90s title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Isn't that those CG sequences on that 90s Johnny Quest show?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Then again, Cyberverse didn't have that much to do with cyberspace anyway.
Well, Cyberverse doesn't really know what it's doing half the time. It also had the season that was called, like, the Bumblebee Adventures that actually had less to do with Bumblebee than the previous season. So it just sort of, there was a lot of branding stuff going on. It would be interesting if we have found ourselves at the point in the whole nostalgia cycle where you see Transformer stuff that's intentionally nostalgic for the 90s.
Cyberworld, please give me neon G2 colors everywhere.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, that seems to be, like, popular nowadays.
Yeah. It's
like the big bright colors.
I mean, we should get a Jazz who has the Jazz Dixie Cup pattern on him.
Yes.
Yes. I want that. I want that a lot. I was looking at Game Boy shells, and there's a replacement Game Boy shell that has that pattern on it, which is a little tempting for fixing up this beaten old Game Boy that I've come into possession of. But more Jazz. We need more Jazz in everything. But yeah, I'm optimistic. Things are looking pretty good. I think there's some interesting stuff on the horizon.
So I guess we could call you Optimist Prime.
Yes. But yeah, I have no real thoughts on what I think Cyberworld could be. It would be kind of neat if it was sort of a Cybertron story. I don't know. I like stories that are like... I know you have people who have strong preferences between Cybertronian only stories, and people, like, no one seems to say, well, I prefer it when they're interacting with humans, but I do like it. Like, there can be really good stories about them interacting with humans.
Yeah, you can do good ones. We've seen Rescue Bots.
Yes, you can do good stuff. It can be done. It's just sometimes gets a little cringe, but
Well, probably is not my stupid favorite idea for a series.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Do robotics.
Mm-hmm.
What's robotics?
The plot is aliens are stuck, like, they're digitized and stuck in a computer on their homeworld, and humans arrive and wake them the fuck up.
That old robotics cartoon, right?
Yes, the old cartoon. Oh, it's a stupid idea that you could just transplant right into Transformers.
Well, that War also goes kind of the premise of Starriers?
Huh?
Wasn't that also kind of the premise of that old toy line, Starriers?
Oh, Starriers! Yes. Yeah, well, okay, go full Starriers. I love Starriers, the comics, anyway. Wish that had gotten a cartoon.
What was that about?
Same thing, like... Well, that was, like, advanced robots that were built by humans. Humans went to sleep, and then the Starrier robots are wandering around so long that they just get into infighting and go into two factions that half of them want to wake up humanity to ask them, what the fuck? And the other half just want to murder the fuck out of humanity.
That's kind of relatable.
It's like, thank you for fucking us over and leaving us alone. So it's like, just do something like that. Humanity arrives on Cybertron, wakes up some Transformers who've been in a cyber world fighting their war digitally for centuries, and give them new bodies, and shit happens.
Cybertron would be the cyber world.
Yes. Which actually, that would be fun. Like, just humanity in the future lands on an alien world that is Cybertron, instead of being modern day. That would be fun. It's not what we're going to get, of course not, but who knows what the fuck we're going to get.
We will know someday in the future. Yeah.
In next year, maybe. Or 2 years or whatever. When Transformers 2 comes out.
I mean, the thing is, with whatever the follow-up to Cyberverse is, they need to put out something that isn't Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put it normal. Can we get, like... Well, the problem is there's no Saturday morning cartoons anymore, so you're going to stick it on Nickelodeon or... Question mark?
I mean, Disney... I don't know. Disney Plus, Max...
I mean, Disney Plus would be cool, but unlikely.
YouTube.
Yeah, like HBO Max. Like, Cartoon Network, that's HBO Max now.
Oh.
Well, I guess. Okay.
Or, yeah, just, like, put it on TV. I don't know. I don't know how kids watch things now.
On YouTube.
I'm pretty sure just on TikTok. I'm pretty sure kids just watch things on TikTok now.
Oh, man, they're just, like, they cut it down from, like, the 12-minute Cyberverse episodes. They're just TikTok length.
Yes.
And they're all, you know, shot with vertical cameras.
Oh, no. They tried that. It's Quibi, wasn't it?
Oh, God, Quibi.
Yes. The one that they tried to push as, like, something to watch on your commute, and then COVID happened.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, and the stupid show with the golden arm. And all
and then
that
all those
nonsense.
Shows were terrible, and it cost $1 zillion.
Yeah.
Oh, that's incredible. Man. Quibi.
I mean, Quibi was not a good idea to begin with, but it's like, ooh, it was just murder.
So R.I.P. all that money.
Also, like, watching shit on a commute, it's like, who had not enough people have a commute where they're in a vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly
with good cell service
have had times when I've ridden public transit and it was great, but that's definitely not the lifestyle most people have these days.
No, unless you live on the coasts.
Yeah.
Your audience is tiny. You get some people in Boston, sure, that's great.
Boston.
Anyway, we've gone on a long time for a...
We have gone on a long time.
Let's bullshit episode that started slow.
Yes.
Yeah, hey, that's how it goes. Well, we will be back next time with even more Cyberverse. We're getting close to the end of that first season.
Yay! Good. Hopefully, good. Hopefully...
thank goodness.
We're going to see if they ever escape that Cyberverse.
Yeah, hopefully as the year wraps up, we'll get more on a normal schedule again, because we've been very bumpy over the summer.
Yes.
Yeah, people getting COVID.
People doing stuff. Got a lot of...
Our September Patreon might come out in October.
Yes,
but we'll... Late again.
It'll come us on spooky for October.
It'll be September in spirit.
Yes. All right, and so until then, of course, you can find us all over the internet. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are on Mastodon, and we have a Patreon.
Yes, we are hosted on iaconunderground.net, where we have a Patreon set up to help with hosting and other expenses. That is patreon.com/iaconunderground. All is one word. It is also linked on iaconunderground.net. Every month we put out a special episode. We try to do it within the month, but sometimes we overlap a little bit. But every month does get an episode where we watch something fun and topical. For this month, it was the episode War Dawn of Generation 1, for obvious reasons. Plus, because it's my birthday, I get to talk about how much I love the Aerobots. So if you would like to hear about what kind of kittens I think each of the Aerobots would be, or the Aerobot Order of Mischief, then you should definitely join our Patreon for as little as $1 a month and listen to those episodes. You know what we should do for Halloween?
What?
Dark Awakening.
Ooh.
Oh my god, that I was thinking. So I leave a lot of this random streaming stuff on in the background for background noise in my apartment. And I was thinking about, like, a creepypasta sort of story about somebody having, you know, some old cartoon that they just barely remember on in the background, and then in the middle of the night, and then, like, some really fucked up episode comes on, and they're like, what the hell? And I was like, no, wait, that's just Dark Awakening.
Or the G.I. Joe Springfield episode.
Yes! There's no place like Springfield is also that episode, yeah. But just Dark Awakening is like, if you were not prepared for that, and you were just streaming along some fun G1 in the background, and you're like, what the hell is this? And it would definitely have creepypasta vibes. So, yeah, that's my suggestion. But as we have just done some G1, we could do something else, but that's my nomination.
Okay. Well, there's always Ghostbusters.
Yes, there is.
Although we have done both regular and extreme Ghostbusters. And, of course, there's a new Ghostbusters cartoon in the works.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Interesting.
It's going to be a show run by Daily Show writer and podcast host Elliot Kalin.
I am only interested if we can get Holtzman back into continuity.
Well, I wonder if it's going to be like a cartoonified version of like the current movies. So
probably.
I mean, maybe you'll get your lesbian sexual tension in that one, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I still haven't seen that Frozen Empire, so I cannot personally attest to the sapphic nature of the film. But I'm willing to believe Jen on this one.
Yeah, it's...
What streaming service is that on?
I don't know if it is on one. I did it as a digital rental.
Oh.
But you can go to Just Watch, and usually it'll...
That's what I always do.
It'll tell you. So yeah, we are on Blue Sky as Iacon Underground.
It's on Netflix.
There you go. We are on Mastodon on the Retro.Pizza server as Iacon Underground. And occasionally I still bother to cross-post new episode announcements to Twitter, but I'm sort of backing off from that a little more just because I don't want to encourage people to be there.
No, I did post the last episode.
If you really can't deal with Mastodon, please at least go to Blue Sky.
Oh, I haven't retweeted on Blue Sky because I don't go to... I forget to go to Blue Sky.
I mean, I guess there's Threads, but...
Fuck Threads. I don't like Threads.
I have enough compulsory Facebook in my life.
Anytime I go to Instagram, it's trying to get me to go to Threads. I don't want to. Instagram is just for photos and toy designs, mostly.
That's why I don't use it more, because I make more words than pictures. But that's just me. Anyway, patreon.com/IaconUnderground.
All right. So until next time, and until the next 400 episodes, I'm Rob.
I'm Jen.
And I'm David. 400 more episodes? I mean, we have to go until Beast Wars 30th.
You know, RFC, Radio Free Cybertron, just hit 900. It can
be
done.
There you
go. Wow. It can be done. Like...
So you mean now they're over 900?
Yeah, now they're over 900. What? 900?